Morning, good evening, very quietly because we're out in public. Welcome to the very first Alfresco All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. It's number Starbucks order 64. I have no idea where it fits into the order. We're not in front of the computer screens, but right in front of me, in person,
is Ray Bamford. Oh, how exciting! An in-person podcast. This is the first time we've done. No, we did some at Nokia World last year.
We did, yeah, but then we were on the floor of a hotel room, and we don't talk about that.
No, that was that. Here we're in really in public. In fact, we're just down the road from Nokia's new London HQ that's in Kingdom Street.
Kingdom Way.
Two Kingdom Way near Paddington, and it's one of these, you know, glass, shiny edifices.
I do believe, though, that the address was under NDA.
Oh, well, everybody knows where it is now.
Yes, it's just off the A505 north of Paddington. We don't have anybody else on the table beside us, apart from our bags. That's not Steve and David. They will be along at the next Insight podcast. Now, to be fair here, folks, all the in-depth stuff, the forensic examination, all the excitement and the detailed deconstruction of the marketing messages that you would normally expect off the podcast, you're not going to get just now. You're going to get mocha latte and a hot chocolate fueled snap impressions. We're going to just be clear on that one. We will get to all of those, both back on the website, allaboutwindowsphone.com, and of course in the next podcast when we're safely ensconded back in the studio and can script everything out, because we don't improvise this. We write up the entire hour of the show before we start.
Of course we do.
So that means... Yep, that's it. That's the script there. We are going to talk, obviously, about the big launch, the big day that was yesterday, or the day before yesterday, depending on when people listen to that. We are going to be looking at the handsets from the three major partners at Windows Phone. We're going to have our snap judgments on the marketing ideas and the handsets and the physicality of them as they drive through. So, Rafe, shall we go in chronological order?
I think so, yes.
Okay, first the Earth cooled. Then the dinosaurs came, but they grew too big and scary.
Maybe we could skip a few minutes.
Okay, and Prince Charles started wearing Lady Di's underwear, and Windows Phone 8 launched.
That's right.
Yay!
In fact, it happened yesterday as we're recording this, and there was an event in San Francisco, but it was kind of simulcast to London and a number of other cities, and we were actually at the London launch, just to give some context. So we were watching Joe Belfiore without any audio for the first few minutes, then they fixed the technical problems, were able to see it, and then afterwards we were able to get some hands-on time with all the devices, as well as see various demos. And I had both Ewan and myself were there. Actually, there was an awful lot going on. There were some new features being announced, but also it was kind of the marketing message we wanted to talk a little bit about in this podcast.
What I found amazing, and when people, you know, a lot of people come up, and the PR people will come up and ask them, well, what did you think of that? And sort of, do I need to steer you in the right direction? Have you picked up the right marketing message? I'll ask you the same question, Rafe. If you can, how would you describe it in one word? But the word for me was emotional. This is something that, you know, Joe Belfiore drove most of the presentation. You know, Steve Ballmer came out at the end and was very Steve Ballmer. But what surprised me was here we didn't have presentations of bar graphs or adoption curves or marketing studies, or we found out that 76% of consumers prefer function A to function B. What we had was, I need to share the shopping list with my wife so whoever leaves the office first can get the right things. I need to give my kids a go on the phone without running up a huge bill on a data call or accidentally sending out a Twitter message. I want to be able to look at my lock screen and see pictures of my past, see things coming up from Facebook and everything. The launch made Windows Phone 8 emotional and personal.
It did. I mean, the way I describe it in Rafe language is...
Oh, we're going to be here forever, aren't we?
We are.
The great thing is I can do this, listener, when he's going on for too long. I like this in person. Okay, clock starts.
It was user experience and case study driven. So it wasn't about the technology. I mean, there were some comments about it does such and such a thing, but actually it was about the way normal people use devices and the way that Windows Phone would make your life easier, with a huge emphasis on personalization and how it was unique to you rather than a generic product. And I think that was a really interesting way of pitching Windows Phone against iOS and Android, which are generally technology driven to a large extent. Apple may be less so, but in recent years it's, you know, become about, it's the bar chart, as you say, is bigger. This was about how it will make your life better. And given that the position Windows Phone is, I think it was an interesting tactic. Now, the tech media might sort of put their nose up at that a little bit, but I think it will go well in the lifestyle media, and that's probably a clever way for, you know, Microsoft and all of its partners to break through a little bit in the messaging, which is something they've struggled with in the last year or so.
What I found interesting in all of this was it was almost the same presentation as we saw at the Developer Summit in the summer. We saw the start screen described again, we saw the live tiles described again, we saw Kids Corner being demoed again, except, you know,
Kids Corner was new this time around, Ewan.
We saw the wallet last time, didn't we?
We saw the wallet last time.
But we're doing this in one take, so oh my boobies, stay in. But my point here is that was a very, in the summer, was a very technical presentation that was geared towards the developers, to the bloggers, to the geeks, the geekerati and everything.
It was about that common core, the kernel, the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, and it felt kind of flat. It felt kind of, But when we look at this one, you know, it wasn't aimed at these geeks. It was actually aimed at people who would walk into a store and go, I just want a phone so I can see my kids and I can get in touch with my mum on Twitter.
And a good example of that was, you know, as I said, it had the Common Core stuff last time, but now we learned about kind of what that meant. And so it was Xbox Music was being talked about the way Xbox games and smart glass would sort of integrate this stuff together. And, you know, obviously the Windows 8 launch has happened as well. We've now got that look and feel common across loads of platforms. But the point was, you know, you'll be able to pick it up and use it straight away. It wasn't, it's the same design language. It's the, you'll understand it immediately. It'll look the same. It will feel the same. It'll be easy to use.
So we got the same presentations. We got the same information. But I think Microsoft were far better this time around describing what Windows Phone is and what Windows is than previously.
Yeah, I mean, that does reflect the different audience. And let's be fair, there were, you know, some new features talked about. Maybe we should just run through them.
Kids Corner.
Yes, we mentioned Kids Corner. So this is the idea. I would actually describe it as guest accounts on a phone.
But it's a lovely way of describing it and skinning it.
It is, and it's just come in, I think, on Android 4.2. But I would say this is a more complete solution in that it feels consumer-ready rather than kind of a geek thing. And essentially what it is, it's a custom home screen that you can activate when you're sort of on the lock screen. You swipe right and then up instead of having to enter your lock
custom
code.
Screen. I'd say it was a custom launcher.
Yes, a custom launch is a better way of putting it, because you say what apps you want to be able to access, and you can actually personalise it if you're, you know, the person using it. And obviously it's, you know, marketed at being aimed at children, but you can also use it with your mates who you don't want to share, you know, some of your personal emails with.
And anything else. What things would you not want to share with us, Ray?
Well, my pictures of cats, obviously.
Obviously,
because they're very private.
Because you're a great big musicals fan of anything written by Richard Stilgoe, aren't you?
I would be if I knew who he was, but
he was the lyricist on Cats.
Oh, right, okay.
Along with Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Fine. I thought Tim Rice was... No, he was the music composer.
Yes.
Okay, I'm not completely...
You're not up with your Hollywood musicals, are you?
Anyway, and Ewan would obviously be hiding his Hannah Montana music or something. And Steve, you'll be able to hide your Hawkwind music from everyone else now.
Indeed, yes. So lots of things can be hidden. The thing I liked here about Kids Corner is it's a very simple concept to describe. You can only launch certain apps.
Yes.
When your screen's locked. You can still put the PIN number in to get to the full flow of applications. What I loved here was they didn't just go, here's a nice little YouTube video of kids using it. They didn't go, here's the use case, and described it on a bullet point with that nice black blue going to background. Joe Belfori brought his kids out onto the world stage at arguably one of Microsoft's most important launches and let his youngest daughter demand to play Fruit Ninja.
And I don't know if that...
But we weren't allowed to applaud.
No, we weren't allowed to applaud because they were shy. But I think it has to go down as the bravest tech demo I have ever seen. But it added a personal touch to it, and it was very, very canny marketing.
It comes back to that word that I wanted to use earlier, which is emotional. Have you got your word yet, by the way?
Not yet. I'm still thinking
about it.
Still
going on that one. Okay, but and the other thing, of course, is this was the first time that we really got to go with the software. You know, the hardware has been announced from the start of September with the ATIV. I noticed that everybody's pronouncing it differently. Nice move there. they must really have hated Sony when they released the Vita, and we just, oh no, we're going to have to turn it around now, aren't we? We had the hardware, but now we can actually have a go with the hardware with the software, and we were given unfettered access. We could pick up handsets, we could play around, we could take pictures. Yeah. Nothing was locked away. I mean, I got my hands on the A2S. I think for a lot of people, it was the first time they got it. And we got a picture on it, and we sent that to Steve, and we still to hear back from what Steve thinks of the quality of the picture, and how good I was at taking it. But we'll have that up on the site at some point. But it was just really nice to finally see the two bits together.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been a fan of this kind of two-pronged launch approach where basically we've had the hardware and the software comes later. But having sat through that presentation and now, you know, all the information is that the handsets are literally days away, I mean, a few weeks in the case of the States, but, you know, they're launching in Europe this weekend as we're recording it. It does kind of make sense, and they're able to bring out some of the new features. We talked Kids Corner, but there was also Rooms, which is kind of like having a mini social network in your family. I mean, it's kind of like Groups on Facebook or something like that, but again, it was, you know, a nice addition. And then there's a little bit shot all the way through updates in terms of things for Bing. I think my probably favourite update that I'll see myself using most is the idea of having a live lock screen, and this is the fact that it'll update background pictures and also has customizable notifications. It's got 5 notifications, I think it is, along the bottom. You can specify which one they are. And actually, in terms of, you know, glanceable, the way people do tend to do it is pull their phone out of their pocket, have a look at it. You'll be able to see from the lock screen if you've got any new emails, or maybe it's a new turn in the game that you're playing, or indeed anything else there. You know, for the All About Windows Phone app, you'd be able to see how many new stories there were, for example.
You're going to have to get coding. You're going to have to get the whip out to our guy who does the coding for us.
Yes, indeed.
Of which we're very thankful to him.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. But also it's upgrading, updating the backgrounds automatically in the background, and one of the apps that will do that is Facebook, so all the pictures you upload to Facebook, but you can also get Bing backgrounds, and I'm sure there's going to be a whole load of other applications. I really like the idea that my background will change all the time on my lock screen, because you tend to customise and have it once. But if, again, it's, you know, it's personal to me, it's kind of something new to discover each time you look at the phone. And I think that use of the lock screen is, you know, very intelligent, just as Nokia did on some of their AMOLED devices. They had a clock showing all the time. It's not the same set by any, but it's a sensible, logical solution for the lock screen, which up until this point has felt a bit wasted. So that was probably my personal favourite of the new features.
I mean, well, let's go back to that Samsung for a second. Let's just hit through all three of the major
devices.
Hardware.
Yeah,
let's go through. Let's start with Samsung. Is it wrong to feel cheated that it just feels like a Galaxy?
It's hard to escape the conclusion that it's kind of the contractually obliged phone that Samsung have delivered.
Yeah, now, it is essentially. Is this Samsung's Fleetwood Mac's Tusk album?
And you compare it to HTC, who have made so much effort to come up with a unique design, and, you know, Nokia already had a pretty strong, you know, message with Lumia, and that continues. With all that said, actually, it's quite a nice device. You know, it's a big screen, it's very thin, it feels, you know, the build quality is good. You do start to wonder how that will be in 6 months' time, and the sort of durability of some of the materials being used. But
it does feel like the back of a signed Series 3 scene, money in the till, with that sort of rubber sensation feely thing.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, it has got that kind of aluminium backing on it, and you know, we'd have to use it for a while to be sure, but it just doesn't feel like it's had the same commitment and love put into it. And that kind of extends into the software as well. You know, Samsung were being very cagey about what custom apps would be. They only talk about Family Story and Chat On. And
that's about it, really, isn't it? I mean, there's the tech. Well, I know when I reviewed the Omni M, I called them, they're more like tech demos. The photo applications and the montage stuff.
And we assume they'll be there. And then talking about the new Windows Phone 8 camera lenses, which we'll talk about more in the future, but they're going to have, I think it's a beauty lens or a beautification lens, which basically is touching up in panorama. And you kind of compare that to what's going on elsewhere and think, it just feels like a little bit more effort could have been made there. So the Samsung device is nice, but I think most people, unless they're, you know, already established on the Samsung brand, that's something they like, would probably be well advised to consider the HTC and the Nokia devices before the Samsung. We're going to have to test run in a longer term review, but that was kind of a snapshot reaction.
I do get the feeling, though, the Samsung's selling strengths is going to be going into the corporate market, because, you know, Samsung has a lot of contracts there, and not just for Windows Phone handsets, but also the Android handsets, hardware, laptops, computers themselves. I could see a lot of the B2B people looking at this and going, if we need to go and buy into Windows Phone, why not buy into that?
I can. I think it's priced a bit too high for that, based on the early pricing we've seen for it. But where I think it will do well is people who want kind of the thinnest, the biggest. You know, that's where it does stand out. You know, it's a big device, big screen, and it is very thin. And it feels pretty good in the hand. And a lot of people won't object to it being, you know, a Galaxy clone. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that in a sense. Why not reuse it? But it just, as I say, the effort compared to what the other manufacturers did. It's inevitable. Of course Samsung aren't going to put as much effort. They're doing really, really well on Android. And this is kind of, we need to have something on Windows Phone as well. That's always been the Samsung strategy.
So, HTC, who arguably aren't doing as well as Samsung on Android.
Just one bit. Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. I know we got 55 days to Christmas, I think, from that. But it's give or take one or two. Okay, HTC have put the design in, have taken the time to do that, but at the same time I wouldn't want to drop an HTC. I think I'd be okay dropping the Samsung, and I think I would be okay dropping the Nokia, but I pick up that HTC and it's just a little bit,
it does feel very delicate. I think that might be a bit unfair on HTC because I know they have a big testing program for that sort of thing, but I mean the thing about the HTC is it feels really light and it feels really thin in the hand. Actually, it's not that thin, but because it's got tapered edges. And essentially it's almost like it's sort of barrel shaped.
Dare I say it, it's a bit like an iMac.
It is a bit like that, and then a barrel that's maybe been sat on because the curves aren't that big, but there is a central spine where all the components are arranged, which is the thick bit. But consequently, it's probably one of the most comfortable devices to hold in the hand that I've come across on any smartphone.
Now, you've had more time than this with me, because to me, those edges just didn't feel quite right. But that's probably something that comes to touch.
This is a good example. It is quite subjective, this design thing. And I mean, I think you can make a strong argument that HTC with the 8X, and to maybe a lesser extent with the 8S, kind of have won the design battle on Windows Phone. Because it is very elegant, it feels very nice. I think the thing is, Nokia also in there with the shout, it's pretty close because the Lumia devices feel great as well. And they have some extra stuff, which maybe we'll touch on briefly in a moment. Yeah. But HTC, you know, have made a bit of effort on design there. They are very visually distinctive. They feel different from their Android devices. You know, they've made an attempt to do differentiation with things like Beats Audio. Might touch on that again in a minute, because I know we've got kind of... I don't want you to start...
For the first time, you can see my jiggling knee while we're recording a Winsight podcast.
And they do have a decent camera on there, and they put the HTC clock application. There's a nice update there that integrates with
They have to put the HTC clock application.
They do, and it integrates with the kind of the new live lock screens, which I think, you know, they've actually put a bit of effort into their third-party software. Certainly, you know, they're number two behind Nokia, which is the undoubted quantity, but also the quality thing.
And of course, if we reverse it around in the American market, HTC are going to be the number one here, and Nokia are going to be the challenger.
Exactly. And the other thing about the HTC devices, they are priced pretty competitively, because the 8X is going to be around the £399 mark, SIM-free, and then the 8S is going to be sort of less than that, ballpark figure, £275. So they're going to undercut probably the Nokia devices by a little bit. And that could make a difference when you get into the high streets. And let's not forget, HTC has easily got the biggest distribution in terms of the number of operators and countries. You know, they're on every operator in the US, every operator in the UK. And I think that's, you know, a significant achievement. So, you know, they're doing well there.
So I didn't get any time at the Windows Phone 8 launch really to get a hold of the Lumia devices, did you?
Well, I had seen them before, but I was concentrating on the other stuff. But there was a slight secret bit of noise, knowing that the next day...
Bum, bum, bum! You have to do a sound effect as well.
Bum, bum, bum.
That's the same sound effect, just through Beats Audio.
Okay. Well, I think we're getting a trailer there. Yes, we knew we'd be coming in to Nokia's HQ to see a bit more about the Lumia and get some presentations on the background. And
so let's fast forward 22 hours.
Yep, absolutely.
And we get ourselves up here to the secret destination just north of Paddington Station. Come out of the Parade Street exit, turn right again, and you will be there. And Nokia are projecting confidence about the Lumia range.
They are
making a very big effort to show that they are back in the game. I mean, some of the marketing slogans that we saw there, everybody loves a comeback.
Yeah.
You know, I mean... now, here's the question. they have to project that. They're projecting it well. What do you think the ultimate result for them is? Do you think they're gunning for 10%, 20% market share? What do you think, Rafe, the internal goal?
We always try and find that information out, but of course they're very cagey about it. I'm not sure it's necessarily about market share at this point. I think it's probably about establishing an upward trajectory and kind of establishing themselves back in the UK market. Talk about the UK here, but that can also be applied, I think, globally. You know, they've gone down to a very low point, and it feels like with these devices they've actually got a credible competitor in the game. And, you know, Nokia's in a different position to all the other Windows phone manufacturers because they're all in. You know, they are the only ones entirely dedicated to Windows Phone. It's important for HTC because they're not doing great on Android. They need that extra boost. Samsung really couldn't care less, I imagine. Windows Phone for Nokia, it's an all or nothing game. And that is reflected in both the way they project themselves and the amount of effort that goes into the devices. Because I don't think it's unreasonable to say that more development time has gone into the Nokia Lumia devices than anything else. And now they're looking, you know, what would be success? Is it 5 million devices? Is it 10 million devices? It's very difficult to predict those companies without putting them into some kind of statistical model, and I don't have that on hand. I mean,
and that's what happens when we do it live al fresco.
Exactly. But it's quite clear the message is about establishing credibility with operators, and that's actually one of the reasons they're doing exclusivity in the UK. They feel they can better control the whole retail experience, and they need to prove that before moving on. Actually, I think I can buy into that argument. I mean, part of that is wider exclusive, but also it's kind of the having gone down to, you know, just a few million sales last time in the last quarter, rather. Now it's about getting that trajectory going back up the other way with Windows Phone 8.
Now they're going twofold approach here. The Lumia 820 range is pretty much everywhere. I think from every single network has been carried at a range of prices. I think I saw one that was like 15 quid and 21.50 a month or something.
That's right. I mean, it's going to vary from network to network. And in the States, it's actually kind of a similar story, although there's, you know, obviously with the 810 and the 822, they've kind of done specific versions for Ryzen 2. But essentially, that kind of mid-range Nokia Lumia phone is going to be available everywhere. It's just the 920 that has this exclusivity attached to it. And we have to remember, those lower cost devices are the ones that sell in bigger numbers. Yeah. You know, that's the one most people will buy when they go into the store.
So I can see where this argument is going. And because there's only two of us, I have to take the contrary opinion, which is a shame because it is quite an interesting choice going exclusive. So Rafe, you're quite happy to take the pro side on this one now. So in our little charade, exclusivity, a good thing in the... Let's stay with the UK market. Okay, tell us briefly where the exclusivity is and why it's going to work.
The exclusivity is with EE or Everything Everywhere, but you'll also be able to buy it on T-Mobile and Orange. So effectively what you've got is two out of the five big UK operators. You'll be able to buy the Lumia 920. It won't be available SIM-free officially. I mean, there will be grey imports, so if you really want to get your hands on it, it should be possible. Do I think it's a good thing? Well, it's really about how many you want to sell, and Nokia think that they would sell more Lumia 920s by being exclusive, but also sell them in a sustainable way. Because you have to remember, it's not just about the sales figures for the 920. You also need to, you know, start selling the follow-on Lumia handsets, and that means it's important to establish credibility in the retail and the operator channels. And so you could do a broad launch, and you might even sell more that way. But is the training in place? Is the operator confidence in place? Is the retail confidence in place? Not necessarily. So, you know, Phones for You have kind of set themselves up as the Windows Phone kind of retailer, and EE are kind of going to do the same thing effectively. And there's a happy time with the 4G, I think, especially given that's got a premium price. And actually, exclusivity, by accident, actually works quite well there. And I think it probably is the right approach today because it goes back to what I said before, that Nokia is starting from a low base. You know, they are having to behave almost like a startup or a new entrant. You know, the Symbian market share was there before in the UK, but now it's down to next to nothing. And, you know, for most people, Nokia will be remembered for what they will think of as now feature phones. Even if they had a Symbian device, you know, they'd have probably considered it a feature phone. And then, of course, going further back, it's all the old Series 40 phones and the 3310 and all those classic Nokias that people have fond memories of. But they need to have, you know, you walk into a store, you get it sold in the right way and a way that people like it, start using it, taking advantage of the features. Is it easy to do that with exclusivity? That's what Nokia's betting. And, you know, I actually think you can make a compelling argument that way, however frustrating it might be for the early tech adopters who are desperate to get their hands on it on their network.
Right, okay, so now I have to take the contrary opinion. It's not that difficult, because this, I think, is a very finely balanced decision.
Yes, well, let's start with that.
Any good PR person can obviously argue either way, but it's the same strategy here. You know, it's like Formula One racing. One pit stop or two pit stops kind of gets you to the end of the race at the same time. It's the rest of the traffic. It's what everybody else is doing. And this is actually where I genuinely believe that exclusivity is a problem. The first one is the perception that it gives of Nokia. You know, oh, we need time to train up all the staff. We need time to get the point of sale stuff in. Well, that portrays an image of a company that's lower in resources, that doesn't have a lot. And that buys into a PR story that everybody else is building up around Nokia, that they are on the ropes, that they do have a short runway of money, that they are burning through money, that they're selling but renting back their HQ. And Ray's looking at me going, no.
And the reality is that is exactly the situation. You can't pretend otherwise. And the thing is, you know, the people who are most annoyed about this are people like you, the early adopters who want it on their specific network. We have to remember they represent maybe 5% of the people who might buy this phone. It's the ordinary people, those walking into the shop going, I want to buy a smartphone. Those are the people that need to be convinced. And by doing exclusivity, EE are going to push it to those people far more than they otherwise would do. And that will be the key to sustainable sales success. You said it yourself.
Yep.
It's not just about the 920. It's about what comes after.
But the question then is the exclusivity and the pushing the EE will do, or EE, I don't know. Is it the pushing that they do, will that overcome the inertia that the rest of the media have built up around the story of Nokia? You know, people walking in to buy a phone at EE may get lots of this point of sale, may see more of this, may have EE pushing it, but at the same time, there's been such a raft of stories, and not just in blogs like ours and websites, but in the BBC and in Helsingomat up in Finland, for example, about the problems that Nokia's in, the amount of burn that they're putting through. And again, we'll come back to the point, it's a very, very balanced point, and I don't think we will ever get a definitive answer, because we're not going to see Nokia's statistic models on this.
No, I mean, you're right, it is a big risk, but you also need to think about what's the risk of doing it the other way round, of doing the broad brush approach, kind of like the Lumia 900, which didn't really do that well in the UK. So I think it goes both ways, and the answer is you can't possibly know, we'll have to wait and see. But it almost feels like the lower risk option is this exclusivity, because you can plot a path through it. You know, the danger is, yes, you do annoy a lot of people, and there's this press perception thing. I actually think you can't use that press perception thing as an excuse, because there's many other reasons that it's like that. Primarily because Nokia isn't doing that well, and the performance isn't that good, and the only way they can really address that is by starting to sell more phones. So it's kind of a chicken and egg thing there.
And of course, Nokia have traditionally always went for the lower risk options when they present with stuff, which might have got them into a bit of problem in the last couple of years.
And we should just say one of the interesting things we kind of learned today about this exclusive is it runs basically to the end of the year. And then I would assume within that contract there are options on both sides to renew it. But obviously it needs to be successful for both sides.
Yeah, but so they're not hard options either. It's an option, but it has to be agreed on by both sides.
It does. But what's interesting is, you know, people hear exclusive and they start thinking about a year's period like the original iPhone. It's not that. This is actually an exclusive period around
eight,
the launch.
8 or 9 weeks, isn't it?
You know, yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's, well, say 3 months.
Okay, let's
which
say
is
three.
Not a long period, you know, because most people buy their phone at the end of a contract. So I actually think it's worth taking a risk here. I can see the business argument from it, even if, as a typical early adopter, I'm going, I want to buy it SIM free and I want to buy it on every network and I want.
But
choice.
If you were an early adopter, you'd want 4G in the UK anyway.
There is that argument, exactly. You know.
So there we go. Okay, let's talk about some nice things. Okay, let's talk about Nokia Music. Like,
I know you don't like knocking music, but I'm a big fan of the Surface. Mobile yeah. First works for me.
Yep. And
you're a music maven. I'm an ordinary person.
That's true.
And this is the really interesting point about knocking music.
It's the complementary and how it doesn't clash with Xbox music.
You hear about it, you know, people going, oh, that's a pretty dumb thing to do. Why have two of them on the same kind of platform? But actually, I really do think they're complementary. And kind of some of the stuff I heard today did reinforce that view. It's the idea, you know, most people who are paying whatever it is, £8 a month for, you know, the Xbox Music Pass, like you, they're music mavens, they're really into music, and they're quite happy. But they do only represent a minority of the, you know, people using the phone.
Yeah. And also the minority of people who pay for music in some form online
in general,
as well.
And, you know, there's an 80% or more of the market who want it free. That's the thing, get it out the box, no registration to worry about, no payment to worry about, it just works. You know, actually, you don't have to worry about loading music on either. Yep. So it's kind of that lowest common denominator. And I think music snobs kind of tend to, you know, put their nose up at this kind of service. And I can almost feel you in doing this. But then,
well, it's just the example of if you pick up your phone and you want to listen to Chumbawamba's Tub Thumper, it's not something you can do with knocking music unless you give them some money.
No, it isn't. But I will say that the kind of the mixes on knocking music do seem to be pretty well curated. You know, we've spoken to a couple of music fans, and I know you're in this opinion as well. Now, of course, it doesn't have everything eclectic, but if you create your own artist-based music, and more on that in a minute, because there's an update coming, which is really good news. Actually, I think they've done a pretty good job on that album, reflecting the fact, you know, knocking music has been an ongoing project through the kind of the disaster that was coming from music, but that certainly didn't take off as it should do.
But it got them the license deals, and it got them
exactly.
The right people to talk to set up Nokia Music so they could give it away for free.
And as a result, they've got 20 million tracks in Nokia Music.
30 million tracks.
30 million, okay.
No, 20 million is Nokia Music, 30 million is Xbox. That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
And interestingly, they're actually in more markets than Xbox Music. I think it's 24 Nokia Music
markets. 14 or 15, yeah.
That's, I think it's 14 or so for Xbox Music in all the bits, and then 20 have the store.
Yeah.
And Nokia have the store, and I think it's about 35 markets, so almost double the numbers.
So
that's actually pretty significant. I mean, that underlies Nokia's still got a big global reach than Microsoft has in mobile.
Now, there is an interesting quirk that I have here, and this isn't about the Nokia Music service per se. It's the fact that if you've got on Windows Phone 7, when you choose an MP3 track, say it's attached by email or anything, you will be taken to the built-in music launcher. You know, you're not going to be taken to Nokia One. So Nokia's extra stuff, things like Gig Finder that Speedlink has, the enhanced biography information that we're getting from the artists in the next update, the increased links to artists' social media profiles and everything that are inside the Nokia Music Player. Those aren't invoked automatically. You know, when you press music in video, or you just press music, or you're using your controls, you'll be taken to Microsoft's version. Obviously, we need to see what happens in Windows Phone 8, and I don't have a Windows Phone 8 handset to go trying that one out. But it means you have to make a conscious decision to go into Nokia Music, which means the discovery potential on the handset is actually a little bit lower. And I think that's one of the main issues I had previously, which is people, it's harder to find.
I agree that, you know, just as Maps has kind of been integrated, you kind of think it would have made sense for Microsoft to do APIs or something here. I will say that discovery is improving. I mean, you mentioned an update that's coming. This will be available on both Windows Phone 8, but also, great news, Windows Phone 7.5 device. And again, Nokia's continuing to keep these soft updates coming. You mentioned the biography and the discography and that kind of thing. And that's actually going to be available from the Now Play screen. You swipe to the right and you'll get this information. But clever, I think, is you'll be able to press the music mix for an artist that's playing and get an entirely, you know, fresh mix created for you that's custom. Because at the moment there's 330-odd curated mixes in the UK marketplace. There is this ability to do custom, but it's not very well used at the moment. They're sort of to encourage people to use this custom functionality more, and I think that's quite clever. That will, you know, help with the discovery. But yes, yes, you can pin stuff to the home screen, and yes, it's an app that's easily accessible, but you're right, it's not quite as integrated as it perhaps should be.
Yeah, it's the same thing that you have on Windows Phone 7 when you have Bing Maps and Nokia Maps.
Yes, and that gets fixed in 8, essentially.
Yeah, by deleting one of them.
Yeah, and you kind of wish, could the same happen for music? Nonetheless.
I couldn't, because of the Xbox Music is so tied into the system.
Exactly.
If I only had the Nokia Music on a Windows Phone 8 device, that would be a deal-breaker for me.
Yeah, of course. But you kind of want, you know, could you have default changes?
Yeah.
You'd like that for web browsing, all sorts of other things, I guess. There's always going to be stuff on our wish list. But I will say that I think Nokia Music is perhaps an underappreciated gem, particularly the fact it's pretty widely available and does give this, you know, free music out of the box. And that's, you know, you don't get that on a lot of handsets, you know. That, you know, free, no ads, no setup. I think that's a more compelling proposition than people give it credit for.
It's people listening to podcasts now are going, oh, but now we get Pandora for a year ad-free. But we need to see the small print on that, and I suspect that's only going to be for American devices only.
Geographic availability, you know, that's you know, a big thing.
And Nokia Music's geographic availability.
And of course, the difference is you'll have to install Pandora. It's not a live tile when you first switch on the phone.
Nokia have done a lot of work on audio as well. They're rightly proud of it, almost as proud of it as they are with the camera, but it's far easier to fake a YouTube video with a camera than it is with an audio. Sorry, than to present a YouTube video that shows that. Sorry.
Yeah, and we'll skip imaging because we'll come to that when we've actually tried it out a bit, I think.
Well, when you say we, you mean Steve.
Well, yes. And audio, it's an audio podcast, so we should talk about audio.
Yes, let's talk about audio. It's got Dolby.
I think it's pronounced Dolby.
No, it's pronounced Dolby. Anyway,
it's Dolby headphone.
Dolby headphone, okay? Specifically here, so basically, a different way of presenting the sound, but preserving as much of the original soundscape and picture as possible.
Yeah, and it's kind of related to the technology you have in cinemas for 5:1. It kind of gives you this almost stereo surround effect, and it's quite hard to describe, but when you listen to music, it does feel like you're almost encased in it, and it's rich, and it's been on the Symbian devices.
Yeah, I mean, Dolby's been working on this for a good 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the demo, I think, first saw the demo in 2006 or something at Mobile World Congress, and it's, you know, taken a long time to get to the handsets. So, say, it's in the Symbian handsets, and I was impressed with it there. Now it's making it into, you know, the
consumer-grade handset,
and it's part of the Nokia Music offering in, you know, the Windows Phone 8 devices.
It's part of the sound system. So even if you play through the regular music player that comes with Windows Phone, you will still have this effect, because what it does is it deals with the left and the right channel that you get on your audio file, be it MP3, Wave, AF, or whatever. And it does stuff listen to the frequencies and the different tones to sort of create a bit more separation and, you know, spacing out those frequencies a bit more so they're more clear to the listener.
And Nokia haven't really emphasised this much in their marketing, but you can't help it reminding you of something, can you, Ewan? And there's another Windows phone manufacturer who's going big on audio.
Is there?
Yes, I think Beats Audio, HTC. Well, I know you don't think they're going big on it, because Ewan, what do you think of Beats Audio?
Beats Audio, imagine a 7-band graphic equaliser, which you have inside the Lumia, by the way, 18 presets, but you can do the presets yourself. With Beats Audio in the settings, you can either switch it on or off. Now, normally you'd get a nice little wave and you can make little shakes. If you remember having old ghetto blasters when you were growing up, you could move the shakes. Now, here's how you replicate Beats Audio. The two at either end of your 7, leave them where they are. The 3 in the middle, push them right down.
Right.
That's Beats Audio.
I think you're being just a little unkind to Beats Audio.
Beats Audio emphasises, again, a certain tonal range, and part of that tonal range is geared towards certain types of music. So things, you know, as we've said before, hip-hop, rap, drum and bass, you know, grunge nerdcore. Grunge nerdcore is a problem. So the bottom basses are all built up quite heavily. You can hear the beats, you can hear the driving rhythm, but the vocal stuff, specifically in the mid-range, which is where nerdcore really kicks in, it's just kind of, you know, there's only a certain amount of wibble you can put through your ears. So if you're going to increase the bass wibble, you need to take out other wibbles, and I just think the Beats Audio takes too much out of that, the wibble in the middle.
Yeah, well, and we should say that this is a subjective area.
Yeah, lots of people really enjoy Beats Audio. Let's be clear on that.
As a marketing thing, it's a really strong thing for HTC, because I mean, you only need to see the number of Beats headsets, you know, walk out in London or any big city. It's incredibly popular.
And they're all on young people.
Yes, exactly. So it's kind of, you're putting a sticker on the back of your phone. Actually, it's not a sticker, but anyway, it's Beats Audio.
And you said I was being low.
Yeah, I'm sorry, HTC. That was low.
Device for you, matey.
And actually, personally, I quite like listening to Beats Audio. I think it does make a positive difference. And the thing is, you can switch it off if you want to. the thing is about the HTC, it's not just about that Beats Audio. They have actually put some hardware in as well. You know, the extra amplifiers. We talked about this in the preview. We'll talk about it more in the review. But essentially, it's putting the voltage up, and it applies to both the loudspeaker. That's the first time they've done it, I think, on the loudspeaker. They didn't do that on the One X or some of their previous devices. And the headphones. And actually, that does make a difference.
It does. We need to know what they've done with the amperage, though.
We do. But, you know, there's a twin thing there that Ewan's kind of implying but not saying. But it will make a difference. Putting in that extra hardware is actually, I think, probably more significant than the software, which Beats up, we should say, is basically all in software. So,
although it can talk if you've got the specific Beats headsets that have the extra hardware in there, it can do the communication there.
That's true, because essentially what Beats is doing is modifying the equaliser, and it will recognise.
So if
some
you have a £300 pair of headphones,
which
talks
doesn't
to it,
really apply to many people.
No.
But what I will say is, I think we can expect both the audio in the HTC and the Nokia devices to kind of be a step up from where they were before. Mm-hmm. I think the Nokia audio in the original Lumia devices was pretty poor, basically, because it was off the shelf, and it was a step back from what Nokia had done before, because they've always been pretty good at tuning audio and putting in high quality components. You compare it to some of the Samsung devices, and I shouldn't be too unfair to Samsung, because they produce some good audio quality too on some of their devices, but I think Nokia's probably fair to say have a consistency over time, and you know, HTC have now established that for themselves as well.
Yeah. HTC are legitimately in there doing good stuff with audio.
They are.
We really do need to see the review handsets to sit down and do the test tracks ourselves and not just listen to random Calvin Harris that we're giving at the press launch. Calvin Harris? Really?
So, but, you know, audio is a good thing. And it's interesting. It's one of those understated things when, you know, when you're looking at a phone, you know, the screen is a big thing. But actually sound's a big deal as well. You know, it does affect you in lots of different ways. You know, when you're playing a mobile game, when you're listening to music, you know, background effects and all of that. So I think it's sometimes an underrated feature on smartphones. So actually, I think, you know, Nokia and HTC have been quite smart in kind of promoting that up the stack as a differentiator, because, you know, we're quite used to cameras and, you know, spec sheets and things like that. Audio, I think, doesn't get enough attention, so I applaud it to both of them.
Okay, so let's bring this to a close, and let's just take a look at the launch couple of days. As you said, these are snap judgments. We will be more in depth in the next Insight podcast. And what's the big thing for me, let's talk about these sort of big moments that we're talking about here, is the fact that, you know, one of the things that people always said about Windows Phone was, oh, it's not themed, everything looks the same, it's just square tiles. There's, you know, how can manufacturers make a difference? I think we've shown here, and we've seen here, that even with the hardware, there were obvious differences. But now we've put the software on top of it as well, and we've seen what Windows Phone 8 can do. The fact is, none of these devices actually are similar. The devices are unique. The devices between us are unique because, we have the Jessica Alba moment and Steve Ballmer on stage, and icky. No, don't fix that for me. It's just the fact that you have devices that are now really customizable. iPhone looks like iPhone, looks like iPhone, looks like iPhone. Android just looks like a complete mess unless you get a Chinese handset like me. Whereas here, they are, you know, you're not going to be able to pick up two devices from two different people and mistake them once you even not before you switch them on.
It is interesting, this, you know, because Windows Phone, you know, follows very strong patterns, and manufacturers aren't allowed to customize it. But, you know, the big thing about the starts, when people are talking about variable tiles, you can get more on it. Yeah, that's great, and honestly, I'm really looking forward to that. But actually, the thing is, it, you know, enables you to personalize it to a greater extent, because you can have quite a lot on screen. You know, previously you were restricted to, you know, 6 or 8 tiles at a time. Now you can have a lot more in the different shape and sizing, and there's also more accent colors coming in. But you will get your photos, everything that's you floats onto the top of these tiles. And you're right, and I think that the most, you know, obvious moment was when, you know, Microsoft showed off some devices from Android and iPhone, and they were quite right. They all kind of looked the same, although they were all running different apps, and, you know, they had been personalized. So it's
and they had grayscaled pictures, so you didn't realize. That was cunning.
That was very cunning. And it was app-centric personalization.
Yes. Yeah, you never saw the start screen, you saw the app launcher screen.
It was. But anyway, it was a bit unfair on Android, because it has the widgets.
Life's dirty sometimes.
But actually, the same applies to, you know, Android widgets. You know, it kind of feels very similar. There's a certain amount of personalization there, but it's all the same widget. You choose from a list of widgets, and I honestly think there is a difference there. So, you know, you ask me what my word was, and actually what comes back to me is individual. You know, these phones, you know, they made a big play of this. We're not designing a phone for everyone. we're designing a phone for you.
And you.
Of course it's marketing speak.
Yeah.
But actually, I think there is something genuinely there. And I've said many times, I'm really glad to see kind of this death of app domination, breaking out the app silo. And Windows Phone 8, you know, continues the good work of Windows Phone 7 on that front. And the idea of, you know, live tiles, that start screen, being the starting point where you experience a phone, and it's glanceable, it's personalised, you know, it floats to the top and it's kind of dynamic and alive, really does hit home. And that's, you know, complemented by things like the new lock screen, and it's complemented by the idea of these live apps, which I'm not sure about the terminology there, but yeah, I think it is distinct, and that is important, because I don't think Windows Phone is going to be able to, you know, come back against Android and iOS without being distinct. So it feels like they're making the right moves. It's well poised.
If this presentation, these presentations, had been 2.5 years ago, it would have been a very, very healthy place for Microsoft to be. Are they far too late to the party to get anything more than a solid third place?
That's the question. Well, we'll kind of to wait and see.
Yeah. It's going to keep us in podcasts for another couple of months, isn't it?
It will. I mean, I think the thing here is it feels like they've now got competitive devices in terms of hardware and specifications, and indeed in functionality in the software. They've got a unique look in the software. I think the one big thing that will be held up against them is the app gap, and that reflects the ecosystem age, which plays into your question. But the honest answer to this is, you know, I think they can come back. It will take time, though, and people can't expect kind of overnight results. But these are, you know, big companies. Microsoft in particular is not going to give up anytime soon, so I don't think it will have to settle for third place. I think, you know, if we start projecting a couple of years ahead, there's going to be an almighty fight between Microsoft and Apple for that kind of second place. I think Android's a long way ahead, and it's difficult to see something happening there. What will be the problem for Android will be, you know, the vested interest, the politics of it, which we've already seen bits of, and it's very Samsung reliant. What happens if Samsung decides to do something else, you know, and Google has its, you know, own share, and, you know, people talk about the value share in Android not being even. I think you can put too much on that, but I think if we've learned anything in the last few years, smartphones, incredibly dynamic market. Things can change very quickly. So to write off any platform at this point, even a completely new entrance, would be, I think, short-sighted.
Given that Steve Litchfield is not here, I will ask the question for him. You mean even write off Symbian?
I think that one is probably over now. But
as is this podcast.
As is this podcast.
Yes, look, I can stop in here. What? Yes, got him. because we said, I said 25 minutes, and you said okay, and I said how long it would run for?
41 minutes.
We're at 46.
Oops.
Yes, oops indeed. So no app recommendations. We will do that at the regular Insight podcast. As always, you can get in touch with us at allaboutwindowsphone.com. No listener questions, although I suspect we may well have generated quite a few of them now. So if you want to email them in to us, they are at
rafe@allaboutwindowsphone.com. If you've got any questions about Windows Phone 8, we can now answer them. So please get in touch.
Oh, no, there are one or two areas that we can't answer.
What are they?
Exactly, yes. But we will do our best to pre-screen the questions for the next podcast. So, as night falls on London, the foul are afoot and all the office workers come out to this Starbucks. You'll notice it's got a little bit quieter now at the end of the podcast. Hopefully you got all the way through. I'm Ewan Spence. Thank you very much for listening. As always, we've got Rafe Blanford here.
Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you on the next podcast.
And we will have more coverage, more content, more congratulations, more brickbats, bouquets, and everything that Windows Phone deserves back on the website for the next days, months, and even years, because I still have rent to pay. www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. Ta-ra for now.